All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
The Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I'm on a big fucking bridge with Richard Bowes. How you doing, Richard?
I'm all right, mate. It's fucking scary, isn't it? It's absolutely hooning it down. Yeah. It's Friday afternoon. We're driving to Wales, and it's been fucking shit weather all week, hasn't it?
Yeah.
If you lived in the UK, you've had shit weather this week.
Yeah, it's been pretty horrible. You can probably hear the rain hammering on the windscreen. We're just giving you a bit of that flavour of this is what's happening. But we are heading down to Rockfield Studios for this special Oasis Collectors Group event, although we're really late, so we're probably going to miss all of it, but fuck it, we'll see what we can get up to anyway. But yeah, so it should be good. I think I spotted earlier on Facebook that Tony McCarroll was there and was playing the drums earlier.
Didn't he bring it on down, wasn't he? Yeah,
yeah, so I don't know if he'll still be there. We will have missed him probably, and Nick Brine's around, and I think they were getting Owen Morris to phone in, but we probably will have missed all that. But anyway, it doesn't matter. So anyway, Richard, how are you? What are you up to?
I'm all right, mate. I'm all right. Yeah, looking forward to seeing a bit of the history, but just planning to stay out of the rain, really. It's been a good week. We've both spoken to Adam Nutter, haven't we? Both done the interviews with Adam Nutter.
Yeah, that was good. So Adam from The Music, that's probably going to be the next one on my channel, I think.
Is it going to be on this episode?
No, I don't think so. I don't know, I've got quite a lot going on. I've got quite a few recorders and things, so we'll have to see where we go. So I haven't caught up with you for a while. So since we've been speaking, you're now working for, I know you did stuff to Live Forever, and then you went to GigWise. So that's like League 2, League 1. And now I'd say you're definitely like a championship level with, who is it, Clash Music?
Clash Magazine, yeah. I think that's probably harsh on the other two, but so basically I'm probably not going to be doing a book for the first half of this year, so I started thinking to myself, well, maybe I can follow the journalism side a little bit more. And so I just through another journalist I know, she kind of gave me the editor of Clash's details and suggested pitching ideas to him. And at the same time I was offered an interview with the Lathams to go backstage at their gig in London at the Lexington and do a couple of interviews with them and kind of do a feature piece with them. So I took that on, and since then I've been doing a couple of stuff with Clash. I did interviews with Stuart McConey and Lauren Verne for the Six Music Festival. I've got an interview with the Go Express for them yesterday. Speaking of which, I need to tell you, might be interviewing Spiral Carpets next week. Don't know who, but if it's Clint, I'll have a word. It's all kind of really enjoying the kind of the journalism writing stuff for it tomorrow. Go see Orbital tonight to review. So yeah, loving life.
Excellent.
Loving life.
And the biggest thing in the world of Oasis, I suppose, that's happened, as I'm trying to pull out here, but I can't get in. I suppose the biggest thing in the world of Oasis that's happened since we last spoke would be the release of Dead to the World. Did you enjoy that? What did you think?
It's beautiful, isn't it? I think it's really got me kind of quite pumped for seeing what the album's going to be like. I'm fascinated to see what the tones are going to be, because is he going to alternate? Because when you factor in Trying to Find a World That's Been and Gone, when you factor that in, so it goes, I've got the album first, the first song's called, but then you've got Pretty Boy, which is quite rocky. Then you've got Dead to the World, which is quite soft. Then you've got, I think it's going to be Open the Chest, See What You Find, something like that. Open the Town, See What You Find. And that might be rocky. Then you go back into Trying to Find a World That's Good and Gone, that's slow and easy now. I'm much more interested to see how the flow of the album's going to be now. I hope he's saving a bit more upbeat stuff for the second half, because so far it seems quite downbeat and melancholic. But we've only got three tracks, haven't we? It's taking shape. And that itself is a beautiful little piece. And someone said on Twitter, it's like a spiritual cousin to Idler's Dream, and I agree with that. I think it's got the kind of understatedness of it, yet the emotional kind of side of it. And I love it. I think it's the sort of song that I don't think back in the day Noel would have given the full arrangement or full band treatment to. I think it would have been maybe kind of kept away as like a B-side or an unfinished song, but now he's kind of probably gone to town on it, and Yeah, I mean, unlike you, it took me a couple of listens, but yeah, no, I love it. I think he's up there with everything, all the good stuff he's ever done.
Listen to it, it's carried on being stuck in my head as well, plus also it's kind of made me then, because you know, naturally if you're listening on Spotify, then kind of Easy Now comes on after it. Yeah. So it's actually given me a, you know, because I hadn't really listened to Easy Now for a while as well, so that's sort of gone, oh yeah, that's good. But I've been really pleased with it, and I think it's, you know, it seems to have had a really big reaction.
Is it a single though? Like, because I mean, if we're just getting a lyric video, does it count as a single? But then Pretty Boy only got a lyric video. I don't know, maybe, I think it might be, I still think we might get another more traditional single before the album comes out, and this one kind of doesn't count. Do you know what I mean? In the way that, like, Come On You Know didn't. Do you know what I mean? Not a proper single. Because if it is, it's a big choice for a single.
What does it mean? What does it mean? We don't know what it means.
My rule is, if it's got a proper video, it's a single.
Right, but what about tracks that have just released as videos and then they're not actually, like, downloadable or whatever? I think that's nonsense. I think if it's downloadable, I think. So if it goes onto iTunes, mm-hmm. then you can download it. But no, iTunes is bloody Apple Music now, isn't it? So yeah. I don't know if you can even download individual tracks now, can you?
You can, yeah. If you've got Apple Music, you can just use, yeah, you can just download it. Yeah, I'll do that all the time. Yeah.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. So it's one of those that's like... Yeah, anyway, whatever.
No, this is important. This is important. Let's settle this once and for all. What defines a single?
I think it's any officially released track to streaming I count as a single. But then, having said that, when I talk about, like, Liam Gallagher singles, I wouldn't include, like, the... like Sad Song from his Unplugged album and things like that. I wouldn't include that as a single. So, you know, so no, it's
was that released first?
Huh?
Was that released first?
From the album? From the album. So. Was it? It was definitely yeah, I think it was, because yeah. I think I did an episode on it with Joel.
Okay.
The one that weirdly has had the most views of any, and they're all from India, which I just do not understand. But anyway,
India loves Sad Song.
India loves Sad Song, and we also break down Take Me in that, when you when Bonehead like released a new version of Take Me or whatever, and it was exactly the same.
Anyway so
I don't know it, but yeah, it would be nice. I think we'll probably get at least one more song before it comes out,
yeah,
in what, because it's still a good 2 months to go, isn't it?
Yeah, well Council Skies was supposed to be the one that came out. Well, so Louise, Stop Crying Your Heart Out, posted a speculative tweet on the Wednesday saying, will we hear Council Skies tonight? We're getting new music from Noel tonight on the Wednesday. Apparently Joe Wiley liked it, but somehow the BBC messed up the announcement, and then the next day it was dead to the world. Like, not only was it 24 hours later, but it was dead to the world. So that suggests Council Skies might be in the frame,
yeah,
for some sort of bigger release.
And I think they released the lyrics to Council Skies as well, didn't they? It was like, well, you could see it on the, when they put out the...
lyric sheet.
Yeah, like the images, because you get a lyric sheet with it, that's it. So yeah, so the fact that, you know, he's obviously proud of that one, and obviously the album being named after it and all that stuff, so... Yeah, so it is exciting, I think. And then obviously he's got the tour dates booked in as well, so the other big news this week is, you know, he'd just been announcing his one-off... small festivals and sort of summer shows in various woods and, you know, bandstands and things, but now he has officially now announced a big proper arena tour, going to all the important places in the UK, except Manchester, weirdly.
Is he not?
No, he's not doing Manchester. So ooh. yeah, I thought that was strange.
Well, he's got the Windsor gig, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got it in the summer, but yeah, I think it's Liverpool's the closest to Manchester.
I think he's done that before as well, actually.
Has he?
Not missed out Manchester on an arena tour and gone to Liverpool instead. Could be wrong.
Don't don't know, maybe he's worried that the Liam fans will boo him or whatever, I don't know. but so I haven't got any tickets for him yet. I was, there's quite a few I was looking at. Obviously, it's like busy old time, and especially the week, sort of that couple of weeks before Christmas, it's like, you know, it's hard to sort of figure out. And to be honest, like, Noel doesn't sell out, you know. So actually, yeah, you probably can leave it. It's like some gigs, you know, you know you've got to jump on it. But I know with Noel it'll be all right. And what will probably end up happening is, you know, with 2 weeks to go, someone will be trying to sell a ticket, and I'll like, you know what, I probably can go to that actually. And then,
that's true of all gigs, really. I mean, plus, yeah, I think because bands have to tour so much more now, nowadays anyway, to make any money, it's always easy to get a ticket for anyone. But yeah, Noel seems to do a lot more, certainly than he used to, touring. So yeah, within that, there's always, yeah, there's generally always tickets available.
Yeah. So have you got anything booked in?
I've got Crystal Palace, and which with Johnny Marr supporting, which I'm looking forward to. That's actually his first UK gig, I believe, if I've got my dates right. Apart from what I imagine will be like special PR and one-off performances for the album launch. He's playing in Somerset in late August. I can't remember where, but I've looked on Google Maps. It's an hour away from me, so I thought I'll probably try and go to that one. I haven't got a ticket for that one, but same thing as you, really. I could probably, there'll always be a way of getting one later on.
Yeah.
And once again, he is doing quite a lot. Like, I quite fancy, he's doing Brighton Beach on the 30th of July, which is the day before my birthday. I quite fancied that, but then I'm seeing him in Crystal Palace 2 days before that. So yeah, I'm not, similarly to you with the arena gigs, like, and also the community ones for me, like Cardiff or London, are midweek. So that's not ideal either. So, don't know. Depends on, maybe. I'm not ruling it out.
So yeah, I know you're saying like about the Wembley Arena gig, which is, you know, it's not the best venue really, Wembley Arena, and it's like the Thursday. I think it's Thursday 17th. It's Thursday before Christmas.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Did you really want to be the Thursday before Christmas, like trying to get out of Wembley?
But then the first time I saw Oasis, it was the Thursday night before Christmas on the 18th. Of December, so, you know, I mean, admittedly that was 26 years ago, so, you know, maybe I haven't got the energy for it nowadays.
Right, so while I've got you here as well, Richard, one of the things I was thinking about recently and pondering over, and I thought it'd be good as we've got this time, this magical time together in the car, is get your hand off my leg.
Sorry.
Get your hand off my leg.
Choked on my beer, sorry.
Yes, I thought, I was thinking about Oasis album covers the other day, as I often do, and so I've started to rank them. So this is my, what I did is I've gone through, obviously there was 7 official Oasis albums.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk about Oasis albums, I never include the Master Plan, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, it's
not a studio album.
It's not a studio album. It's a B-sides collection. Yes, for people that like don't get B-sides, but mate, do you even Oasis bro if you're not into B-sides? So, you know, so it's not.
If you hadn't heard Acquiesce by 995, then get out. Exactly. Basically get out of my face. It's exactly. Basically what you're saying. Yeah.
So yeah, I am including the Master Plan, and we are also including the 2 compilations that they put out in their sort of best of. So we've got Stop the Clocks and we've got Time Flies.
Okay.
And we are also including the 2 live albums that they've put out, which is Nebworth from just last year and
Million to Millions.
Million to Millions.
Okay.
So that's 12, I think, if I've counted right. And let's see if I can remember how I did this. I'm doing this without any notes or anything. So,
are you counting the Master Plan or not?
Yes, yeah, right, Master Plan. Right, so basically, yeah, anything that's got a cover. Right. So what I'm saying is, when we're talking about official Oasis albums
for music.
No, it's 7. But when we're talking about physical product with covers, then yes, then we are talking about albums.
Right, okay.
Plus, also, I haven't included like There and Then and Live by the Sea, even though, you know, you could argue, well, but no, because they were DVDs, so we're talking about actual albums, things that you could buy on vinyl.
Although the 3 bonus disc tracks that came with the There and There DVD and video aren't on any other albums.
All right, shut up. So, in last place, in number 12, we have... Which one did I fucking pick as number 12 now? Nebworth. Oasis Nebworth.
Yep.
Yeah, so for me, the annoying thing about this, and even when they came back with the Oasis Nebworth, all the promotion for the film and stuff, the photo they use isn't from Nebworth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because that was on, like, the posters advertising Nebworth.
Yeah.
Fine, that made sense at the time. But Liam had, like, completely changed. His hair had changed and everything by the time they got to Nebworth. And so for them to then put out the Nebworth album and the film and everything, but obviously we're talking about the album, and it's a picture of Liam with, like, his hair significantly shorter. Mm. It just didn't make sense. I mean, you got the reference if you remembered Oasis from that time that, oh, that was the poster, fine. But other than that, it was the bloody... It's not the gig.
I can't decide if that's really overtly nostalgic and actually quite nice or fucking lazy.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you on exactly those points. However, I do like the fact it all ties in. Do you know what I mean? That's like the live album is the same as the poster. I quite like that kind of unification, one event kind of thing. But yeah, I it's frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's only frustrating because that picture from Liam's probably what? Summer 95, maybe? Yeah,
I think so. I was trying to think of what gig it was. I'm not 100% sure.
I want to say somewhere in Scotland. I want to say that.
Maybe, okay. Yeah, but I don't know. And then just also the image, I don't think is that great. It's using the orangey Oasis logo variant, and it's sort of... And the image of Liam, he's kind of got his mouth open. You can see inside, see his teeth, it's only his upper teeth. And I'm like, and also, why is Noel not there? It's only Liam, and it's just black. So I'm like... What? So for me, it doesn't sum up Nebworth. It doesn't speak to me. I like the fact it's got a picture of Liam on it, which is good. But for me, that's 12th place.
Okay.
All right. So I'll keep going, and then you can obviously
you keep going. I'm just gonna I'll just argue with your decisions. Yeah, about that?
So in 11th place, I'm going with Time Flies.
Right.
So Time Flies is just basically the sea of people at Nebworth. It's a Jill Fermanowski picture. Obviously, it's a brilliant picture, but it's just a sea of people. And then it's got Time Flies written on it. So, what was the... If you're an Oasis fan, it was... having massive crowds was, an important factor of being in an Oasis... There you go, mate.
Sorry, I'm
not. Yeah, that was an important factor of being an Oasis fan, but there's no band members on it, there's no passion, it's not like it summarises the history of the band, it's just like a random picture of loads of people. So I just thought it was just really meh.
I know what you mean. I mean, it's not related to the title, I don't think, but I think the principle isn't the Oasis were always about the fans, weren't they? It was always about the fans, always about the memory, and therefore for a greatest hits... which is what it is, greatest hits collection, that seems the only fitting image. But as a piece of work, as an album cover, it's not particularly great, but I think the sentiment is pretty laudable. Well, not laudable, fits within Oasis's kind of message.
So that's what I've got at 11. At 10 I've got Don't Believe the Truth. So Don't Believe the Truth is, for those that don't know, it's the words Don't Believe the Truth written on some garages. Like, what the fuck is that?
Do you know what? There could be a link, not link, a similar kind of style to Council Skies. Like, kind of backstreet, kind of urban chic, as it were. And the colouring as well. Like, obviously, Council Skies is quite black. And isn't the image in Don't Believe the Truth? It's a black and white shot. It's sepia? Is that the kind of tint?
Is it black and white?
Okay, maybe I've not. I've only seen the artwork on my phone.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah, so I just think... What was that? And also this was the band coming back to form, having a bit of a dip with heat and chemistry. This is them coming back, and you're thinking, what image is going to summarise this sort of return to form of this amazing band? And it's the words "Don't Believe the Truth" written on some garage doors. It's just like, what if that was sort of if they presented 100 ideas, there's no way that could have been the best idea.
That's fair.
And so I just thought that was kind of a bit stupid. I like the fact it's like black around the outside and it's kind of that fisheye lens sort of thing. So that I think is quite smart. But, and Don't Believe the Truth. what's that got to do with garage doors? You know, if it was like a newspaper headline, or if it was like a, you know, something a bit more literal.
That, to be fair, you could say that, you can say that about all the album covers, apart from maybe the master plan.
Yeah. But anyway, I just thought it was like, really? Okay, not very good. What do you reckon?
Yeah, don't disagree with that. Yeah, it's quite uninspiring. I mean, I liked it that the single artwork, I mean, this is true of all of them, but I like the fact the singles artwork kind of tied into it as well. But yeah, over kind of pretty uninspiring image, to go with what I thought at the time was a pretty uninspiring album title as well, to be honest. Although the music's great, but then maybe it was knowingly or consciously low key. Maybe I'm just giving them too much credit. It was more like, that'll fucking do, won't it?
I think so. I think there is a lot of that'll do. And I mean, when I interviewed Simon Halfen, I mean, I did get that impression, to be honest. He was, you know, he was doing his best. He was working hard on it, but it was very much a that'll do sort of from Noel. And that brings us on to the next one, which is number 9, which is Heathen Chemistry. So Heathen Chemistry for me is slightly above Don't Believe the Truth, because I like the fact that the band are on it. You know, I like it when you've got band members on an album cover, or at least you're doing something interesting. And yeah, so it's a little bit above the previous ones for that reason. But it's a weird photo. Like, Andy Bell seems like the singer, because he's the one that's like closest to the camera and he's in focus, whereas the other ones are sort of out of focus. I do like the swirly, there's kind of a swirliness to it, to the blurring, which is quite cool. But yeah, Noel is completely looking the other way. Liam's completely blurred. And so yeah, it's just one of those, you think, wow, that's just not a great photo. And I think from Simon, it was like, well, they just took shitloads of photos. Lawrence Watson was the photographer. And it was just like, and then the band were just like, yeah, that one. So I was like, all right. So yeah, I just think it's just not good. And when you've got, you know, that's sort of similar to what I was saying about Don't Believe the Truth. The band are back. We've got a band. Here we go. Let's showcase the band. And then, but it's like, well, you can see Andy Bell a little bit, but the rest of them are blurred, you know?
I really like the Heathen Chemistry cover, actually. Yeah. I like the fact that Noel's kind of turned away, you know, symbolically turned away from the rest of the band. Omens. Andy Bell's in focus, but you can very clearly see it's Liam as well. Yeah. Like, it's very obviously Liam. And in Underground Station, yeah, I think there's kind of a kind of hazy, kind of cheeky, kind of dark, velvet undergroundy type of cool to it. I actually quite like the Heathen Chemistry cover, I've got to say.
Alright, fair enough. I'm still staying in 9th though.
It's your list, mate.
It's my list.
Even if it's wrong.
Yeah. So in 8th place, we're gonna go with Stop the Clocks.
Right.
So Stop the Clocks is that sort of weird kind of best of sort of compilation they put out in what, 2006? Yeah, and I like the idea of it generally. And like, once again, Simon Halfen talked to me about it. Basically, they went to like Peter Blake's house, his like warehouse, and he was just like, "Well, look, get out some stuff that you think is interesting." So they just went through his warehouse, got out a load of random stuff, like propped it up, and then took a photo of it. Mm. And I'm like, okay, you know, but what's that got to do with Oasis? You know what I mean? If it was like Peter Blake's Stanley Road is one of my favourite album covers. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's absolutely amazing, and it summarises like Paul Weller, and there's various aspects of his life that come into it. You know, if Cannon had done that, I reckon that Brian Cannon would have had like, you know, the fish, there would have been a sink with fishes in it, for some might say. There would have been little references and nods to other Oasis songs. But as it is, it's just like there's some shoes on a shelf, and there's like a dartboard, but it's like a weird coloured dartboard, and it's like, it's cool, it's Peter Blake, but what does it mean? It doesn't mean anything, and it doesn't, and I don't think the image is even that striking. You know, I think it's because it's sort of white, and then you've got these things in the middle. It's like, huh, okay, that's it, all right. And I don't think it was a great piece of marketing either, because if you were looking for an Oasis best of, you didn't even know that was an Oasis best of. It was just like some random album with like some random weird picture on the front.
Yeah, I remember being quite excited by the Peter Blake thing as a proper geek, because it had the old logo on it. Yeah. The old Oasis logo. I remember being quite excited about that. But yeah, when I saw that, when I went to the Peter Blake tribute thing just before Christmas, and Noel had a quick Q&A, not quick Q&A, a quick interview, and he was talking about that, and he was like, yeah, I remember Liam picked the Elvis But that was it. Other than that, it was like, yeah, but I don't know what the rest of it means. We just, as you know, as the story you just told, we went to a warehouse and picked loads of stuff out. I suppose it's a similar logic would be here now, isn't it? They, you know, like they had got access to the BBC prop centre. It's just like, right, go and pick some random shit and do something with it.
Yeah,
it looks cool. Yeah, I yeah, I take, I accept that point. I suppose the dartboard looks a bit like a clock. I don't know. Other than that, it's not really got much much relevance to the title. So yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so I don't think that's that great. Next up, hold on, I'm going to have to work back now. Definitely be here now. Ah, here we go. This is my controversial one. So next up in seventh place, I have What's the Story, Morning Glory. Ooh, controversial.
Yeah, yeah.
So the reason for this is I just don't really think it's that brilliant an image. I mean, I'm sure, you know, Canon, obviously we know that Canon puts a lot of time and effort and consideration and thought into these things. But with this one, maybe if it had been Liam and Noel walking like back and forth on the road, then that would have been nice. But, you know, we know that it wasn't them, because I think because they slept in or they were too drunk or whatever, so they didn't do it. And it's Sean Rowley and Canon himself. And apparently Owen Morris is in the corner holding the master tapes, whatever. So that's like a nice little Easter egg. But other than that, you know, and yes, it's become iconic and people go and stand on the road and almost get run over now and stuff. But as an image itself, I just think, well, what does that mean? It doesn't, it's in London, so it's not like it's in Manchester, or even it's not like it's in Wales where the album was recorded. I'm just like, okay, you know, it's yes, it's an iconic image, but if you step away from that and think about it, I just don't think it's that great. And then, and finally, in the top of where it says What's the Story, Morning Glory, that's in white, and there's bits where you can't even really read it.
It clashed against the sky.
Yeah, because it clashes against the sky. So yeah, I know it's probably sacrilege and people love it, but yeah, I've always just thought it wasn't that great.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's a very striking image, but is that maybe just because we know it so well and what it represents? I mean, did you watch that? Have you watched the fourth? Is it maybe the fourth episode of the Britpop show on Channel 5? That someone make, I forget who it is now, but someone makes a point on it. They're basically, and I'm sure Callum wasn't thinking about this, but like the definitely maybe shot in Bonehead's front room. Yeah. What's the Story, Maury Glory's on the streets of London. Be Here Now is kind of like the height of opulence and decadence.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I buy that. It's a nice little kind of pet theory.
Yeah.
But then that's kind of the same with the whole Morning Glory interior artwork as well. Like it's the back of heads and out of shot focuses Liam, you know. Was it Bonehead's face you never see in focus and the corner of Alan White? So it's all very kind of quite stark. Not stark. Stark's not really the word, but simple images. So yeah, I see your point. It doesn't weigh up to the volume of the music.
Yeah. So yeah, so there we go. So one above that, I have Standing on the Shoulder of Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think this is... So we've got a new logo. Which was, you know, it's not my favourite Oasis logo, but it's nice. At least we were having so Canon's gone. We're going to go something completely different now. We've got a new logo. We've got a New York skyline. I love the vibrant kind of colours of it. That vibrant blue is brilliant. The skyline's amazing. Like we were saying earlier about Don't Believe the Truth, I like the fact it ties in with the singles. We're all kind of based on that same sort of image. I think that was excellent. I think it loses points for me because... why is it in New York? What's New York got to do with it? You know, I just don't really... I mean, standing on the shoulder of giants and you're seeing skyscrapers, and skyscrapers are tall, maybe? But I don't really understand.
That's generous, I think.
You know, I just don't get... You know, if you were talking about Oasis, you know, they're from Manchester and they're from England, and that's such a big part of what they do. Or even with the more psychedelic-y, messed-up sounds on that album, go to the desert. You know, with the, because the Who Feels Love video in the desert, that I think works really well.
Yeah.
But yeah, but as a sort of a night, like, I mean, maybe if like the Strokes album was that or something, fine, because that makes sense. But as a sort of a psychedelic-y album recorded in France, you know, why have you got an image in America? You know,
and it doesn't work having the band's name all across the full length of the top.
No.
I don't think that really. I like the fact it's kind of in silhouette.
Yeah.
But I don't think it works having.
Yeah.
Having that betrays from the image, because it's, I suppose it's kind of, it's all new, but it feels a bit, I don't know, like it was a big comeback, like a bit of the dawn of a new era, but then that new era never really happened, did it? Because obviously we know what was going on. So it kind of, once again, I don't know, although I get images of purple when I listen to a lot of the album.
Yeah,
like the album's quite swirly and purpley, I feel, so I think maybe it does kind of reflect that. But yeah, there's, once again, has no kind of correlation. It's a beautiful picture, but yeah, in terms of relevance to the album,
yeah.
Once again, your guess is as good as mine, because the Castillian theme was recorded in Paris.
Yeah, so, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, so then that's, I think it's...
South of France.
Yeah, South of France, yeah, I was going to jump in. And speaking of a beautiful picture, what beautiful countryside it is here, out in the middle of nowhere. We're about 10 minutes away from Rockfield now. It's gorgeous.
It's all like here in the southwestern Wales, mate. It's all like this.
It's all green.
Green grass.
It's all green in Bristol as well, but that's not just the that's not just the skyline.
Hey! It's a cannabis reference, ladies and gentlemen.
Cannabis. So at number six, I have Familiar to Millions.
Okay.
So I like the fact it's the strong images of Liam and Noel on the front. I really like the way it's laid out. You've got the Oasis logo, and you've got Familiar to Millions coming kind of down on the sort of the bottom third of the picture. And yeah, I like the way the Oasis logo shoots across, and there's kind of like a bar underneath it, and the pictures of Liam and Noel are great, and I love the fact that it had a different colour
for each edition.
Yeah. So whether you got the CD or the double or the single or the vinyl.
What was the mini disc colour? Do you remember? I never actually bought the mini disc, but I remember that was peak mini disc. I bought the CD, but the CD was red. But
yeah, I got the red CD. So
was it green?
Don't know.
Answer on a postcard, please, kids.
But yeah, and if you get the and if you've got a Familiar to Millions, they're like a massively wanted one, aren't they now?
Well, the record.
Yeah, the vinyl.
Yeah,
because Noel didn't reissue it.
Yeah, well, it's yeah. You're talking minimum £400 to £500 to buy original pressing of it, and yeah, Noel, it has not been reissued. Noel has said he doesn't really like that album, so maybe that won't actually happen anytime soon. Either reissue. Yeah, it's a shame. It's the one that I think they could do with. Like they reissued Time Flies in Japan last year, which I managed to get hold of. Loads of people bought. But Familiar to Millions, yeah, it seems to be like it's not going anywhere. One day. I mean, that'd be the ultimate record store day release,
absolutely.
I think.
So that's good. So where are we now? So I've got... what have we still got to do? Definitely maybe Be Here Now, Master Plan, Dig Out Your... So next up, we've got Dig Out Your Soul.
Okay.
Dig Out Your Soul, once, like I've sort of said on here, like what I really like is when the cover art encapsulates the music.
Mm-hmm.
And Dig Out Your Soul being so kind of psychedelic and the fact it ties in with the video for Shock of the Lightning, I think is really cool.
Was it Religious Apocalypse? Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, because there's a couple of tunes that mention like the rapture and stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's...
Religious Armageddon.
Yeah, so you've got like Waiting for the Rapture, and you've got another tune that mentions rapture as well. So there's definitely like echoes of that.
It's a bit Monty Python though, isn't it?
But I'm okay with that, because once again, Monty Python was that sort of 60s, 70s sort of, collage style. It also like ties back, I think, to the All Around the World video when that sort of goes collage style in bits.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I've always liked that, and I just like the colours of it. I think that there's a couple of nice little references in there. There's a like a newspaper headline that says "Come in, come out," which is obviously I just think it's a striking image. It's nice colours, and maybe it would have been nice if there's a couple more like OAC references or something in there, just to really make it literal for a dullard like me. But no, I think it's a really cool striking image that encapsulates the music.
It's very much, it's a very unique image, certainly in the band's canon, but also obviously but designed purposely. Kind of like the Gareth Halliday stuff, the Who Built the Moon kind of campaign, that kind of, as you say, the kind of collage artwork. I agree. I don't like the fact that the album title is in the centre, like that. I always struggle with that, find that a bit naff. And the little like bows that kind of go around the title. But other than that, yes, and similarly with all the interior artwork with that, like it's laden with that, and it's quite an explosion. Like in terms of the eye stuff, so yeah, I signed that one off.
So there we go. So what have we got left? We have got next up The Master Plan. So The Master Plan, I think is wonderful. You know, it's Brian Cannon. He knows what he's doing. It's beautifully laid out, like this classroom. It's a fun idea with the kid at the front, and the idea that it was the master plan was letting people know about these other things. And yes, and the title plays into it, and you've got a kid telling old people, like, you know, they're teaching old people, and the old people are being stupid and like, you know, old school desks, and they're sort of you know, looking at magazines and things like that, which is just really good fun. It's like a lovely image that you can sort of pick different bits out of. And I like the master plan logo, with the wings underneath, like a football badge crest or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I had a standee of that. I went to a master plan launch night in Leicester when I was at uni, and I ended up giving that away as a Patreon gift, which I've regretted to this day.
You fool!
I know. But anyway, but yeah, so I think it's a great image. I really like it, and a fitting kind of final thing that Brian did with them.
God, imagine how much you get for that stand now on the collectors group as well. On the way to see the collectors group, imagine how much you get for that.
I know.
They're not going to buy shitty copies, as some might say, are they? They're not going to buy signed copies by both of us. They'd have paid money for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, agree with all that. What was it? Is it there was images of R2-D2? There's some Star Wars references in it that had to be cut for copyright reasons.
Exactly.
I'm sure on one of the kids' desks or something. I remember Louise pointing that out. It's a lot harder when you haven't got the internet to hand. Yeah, but other than that, yeah, that's why I thought it was the one that makes the most sense in terms of the album title of all the ones. Like, it is, you know, it's a kid teaching adults, which is kind of the whole youth spirit, master plan education type of thing. So yeah, I don't know, that might even be my favourite, actually.
Really?
Yeah, maybe, for that reason alone. Okay, well, go on.
Yeah, so if you're following along, we got two left now, unless I've missed any out. I don't think I have. Time flies. Nebworth.
Top Crops. Stop the clocks. The Goat's Old, Hidden Chemistry, WW3.
Yeah. So there's two left. So the two left are Be Here Now and Definitely Maybe. So which way am I going to go? Am I going to go Definitely Maybe first, or I'm going to Be Here Now first? I'm going to go Be Here Now second and Definitely Maybe first. So Be Here Now, I think, is excellent. You know, I love the fact it was sort of a summary of the... of the time, you know, they've got the Rolls Royce in the swimming pool, and I love all that stuff. I like the fact that all of the band members have got something to do. You know, they're all like, one's looking through a telescope, and you know, what, Bonehead's got a key, and there's all kinds of weird stuff going on, which I think is really fun. And I like all the inlay details as well of just them around on that day. So I think that's all excellent. And it, to me, it's like a summer album. It's always felt like a summer album, and so to have the it'd be like a sunny day in that big outside that big house. And I know it's not the Don't Look Back in Anger house, but I like to think it is the Don't Look Back in Anger house. I like to think that
it's not.
But Patrick McNee and
that's in LA,
isn't
it?
America, I know. Yeah.
Not Hertfordshire.
Yeah. But anyway, I like to pretend it is. So it's not a continuation of that. And then so I think it's great. But then the reason why I've got Definitely Maybe higher is I think they're very similar in that. Obviously, Definitely Maybe and B&L, they've both got all the members doing something interesting, all in different kind of ways. But I love the fact that Definitely Maybe's got, you know, it's a more, you're closer into the image. So, you know, it's quite wide shot, Be Here Now. So, you know, so people in the back of the image are like quite far back and stuff. It's sort of, unless you've got the vinyl, even if you've got the vinyl, you know, they're all quite small. Whereas I love the fact that Definitely Maybe, you know, people are much more, you know, it's a much more cropped image. You are just inside that room. All of the stuff, Burt Bacharach, footballers on the TV, George Best, you know, I love the fact, you know, even all the little details of that, like the random things in Bonehead's living room that he's now, you know, taken photos of and flogged them. I just think it's just a magical cover. Obviously, both of them have special meaning to me because they're sort of two of my favourite albums. But, you know, I love, and they get bonus points for including the people. But yeah, as I said, I think Definitely Maybe for me just takes it for the fact it's got the, you know, I think it's that cropped image. And it just feels so timeless. You know, in the 90s, if we were looking at an album image from the 70s or the late 60s, it would feel really out of date. Whereas these, especially Definitely Maybe, I just think they look still 100% as if they could be an album cover yesterday.
I think that the colour and the tinge of Definitely Maybe is what I always remember.
Yeah,
I think that's the thing that always kind of taps. That's what I always go back to, and that in itself is kind of choose yours. I think as a piece of work, I prefer Be Here Now, if only for the fact that it had the album's release date on it. Oh, yes. I think that was as ideas, once again, as an idea in terms of linking with the actual album title goes, that's pretty faultless because it was all about one day. And I do remember the kind of the picking. Is it funny, isn't it? Definitely maybe doesn't get scrutinised for being, you know, full of kind of things. It was more like, what do you want? Okay, I'll have Ribena, you know. No subtle messages, whereas Be Here Now obviously was, and it was, once again, as I said, it was like the BBC props department. But we spent so long looking for patterns, didn't we? We spent so long looking for kind of stuff that was going on. Like Noel was looking through the telescope at the globe because that represented all around the world, because that was one song, and you know, there were clues to songs and that kind of stuff. It was so exciting to kind of, yeah, dig it through. But definitely maybe it's iconic, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And perfect timing, because we're here at Rockfield. Hooray!
Hooray!
Right. Cheers, Richard. Speak to you later.
See you, mate. Bye.
What? Who's that, then? Someone with a big bag of Guinness. Welcome back to the Oasis podcast. Nick, how you doing?
Good, mate. Yeah, good to see you here. Finally get you down to Rockfield.
I know. I was, it's been really special. You sort of have to remember, like, shit, no, this is actually it. Like, this even when it. We looked at the accommodation earlier, it's like, you know, you sort of look at it and then go, no, that is actually it.
Yeah. You've seen all those, like, videos and the photographs of those rooms, and so you know them already, don't you?
Yeah.
And then you walk into it and it's like, yeah. This is it. You can start putting the whole thing together.
I know.
And even, like, you know, the outside areas and stuff where Stone Roses did the video, you know, on the grass over there and all these little bits around this place. And this is the room. And when you walk in, you're used to, like, what everyone says to me, it's kind of, yeah, they're so used to seeing that image of Liam, like, singing Champagne Supernova for the glass, and then you're standing in where the camera was there, and you're looking at that spot.
It's crazy. It's so special. It's so special. And Carl, well done putting it on, mate. Absolutely brilliant.
It's been an amazing one. I'm glad you're doing this right now, just after we've finished, because now there's a grown man outside crying.
We've reduced to tears. We had tears on the last one we did, actually, quite a few.
Yeah, last, because you punched him in the face.
But there's people outside who are actually very emotional right now and reduced to tears.
It's a really good weekend, but it's a two-day event condensed into one to 1.5, but there's nothing better than waking up in these rooms and seeing the history that's going on here and sharing it with people, fans, is just unbelievable.
So, yeah, so just recap. So, before I got here, you had Tony McCarroll in.
Yeah.
So, what, a Q&A? And, so you had a Q&A, and he got on the drums as well.
Yeah, I put him on the spot a bit. I was like, right, I did pre-warn him before. When he first arrived, I brought him in here and had a little walk around, but I didn't know where the light switch was. So I was walking around with a torch on.
I certainly thought about that when I told you, I left you in charge of opening up. I thought, like, he has no idea where the light's
on.
No,
not a clue. But we walked around and I said, listen, for me, just for me as a fan, will you play Bring It On Down, that kit, for me in Rockfield Studios? And he did it one-on-one to me. I was like, wow, that looks cool. And I did say to him, so listen, I'm sure the lads later on, someone's got the same idea as me. So could we do something similar later on? And he was like, yeah, sure, yeah. But I thought he'd just play it on his own. But then as we asked him, will you play as a tune? He says, is anybody going to join me? And then we got a few OCG lads to get in there, didn't we, and jam with him. And I think when you stood in the studio watching him do his stuff a little bit, you're thinking, wow, this is amazing. I thought, no, we've got to come up here in the proper bit and listen to it. And that's when it all changes. That's when you really feel the warmth and the fucking alive. No, I was mad.
Okay. Yeah.
If you
guys want to have a listen here in the other room as well,
we're going to
walk around.
Walk around. Watching Sue's missus, because she was down there, and I thought, I said, come up here. When she came in, her face just changed.
Yeah.
She was like, whoa. Yeah. No,
it sounded great. Yeah,
amazing. So, yeah, we had Tony McCarroll, Q&A. Nick's been doing Q&As and all sorts all day, talking us through stems and the processes and the histories and the stories. Yeah. We've had Owen Morris over a, we can't, it's not a Zoom call, but it's a video recording of an interview we did.
Kingsley, the studio owner, did a tour, didn't he? And a talk on some of the history of the place.
You can't go wrong with Kingsley. Kingsley's absolutely, his stories are just historic, aren't they?
Do you reckon James would like one, would you?
It's all right, mate, carry on.
I'll tell you what, bring him in,
I was just going to come in and ask you. I've had some, you know, Supreme, the t-shirts.
Yeah.
I've had some done with Supersonic on them. Did I give you one?
No.
Would you like one?
In the middle of an interview,
you're right. Right. Good.
Well, do you want a Supersonic t-shirt?
I'd love a Supersonic t-shirt.
What size are you?
Medium.
Medium. You've got one, haven't you?
I've got one, mate. Yeah.
Medium, large.
I'm a large.
Medium and a large.
Go on.
I knew you were going to say medium.
I'll take a large.
I'm going to take a large.
Happy Mondays.
Have a loose fit.
Get it back.
Yeah. There we go. Nobody can. But yeah, the one thing I thought about with the Tony, obviously I'm gutted I didn't grab Tony, but the fact he never got to come here. Mm. You know, he was sacked before this, you know, only a couple of months before this.
Yeah.
So that must have been almost like, I don't know.
But he was here. That's what's great hearing him talk about the stories, wasn't it? He was sat on that sofa
there. Because he came here, that's the first time I ever met Tony, was him walking up the drive to hand me a cassette of Oasis to give to Ian Brown. So that was the first time I met him, and that was he had been up here then. The next time he came was in the night, and he got brought in the studio. So he had been in this room with Ian one night when Ian was, you know, on form. But it was Tony and Liam.
But he says he was sat on that sofa there next to Ian Brown. And Ian Brown was going, oh, you're the guy that's done that cigarettes and coffee song, aren't you? He's like, no. It's like, just winding him up, just giving him a right wind-up. So,
was that because Oasis were recording over at Mono Valley, and so they sent Tony over for that?
Well, Tony and Liam came over to try and meet Ian Brown, and Tony says that Liam was a bit scared and hid behind the door. But Tony came in, and it's good because the video we've got of the day, Tony's talking about this, and he's kind of there doing his thing.
Should we move into this room?
Yeah, let's move into it. But it's a good story. It's a very, very good story to hear it all.
Yeah, but it's just so lovely that, you know, so he was here for the handing over a tape, but of never having got to play here, and now he's played the Rockfield.
Well, I was saying to Sue, his missus, said, look, it'll be, in reality, as much as it's just play, forget Oasis, it's being a musician, and playing and recording at Rockfield. The first event we did it, I was too hungover on day two to get involved in it, and it was all being in the studio. And when I saw the video come back, I was like, wow, why the hell didn't I just stand there with a tambourine and nod my head? Because seeing my guys all doing their thing, I was like, that's historic. That's a memory for them forever.
Yeah.
And that, you know, Tony just kind of turned into a little music fan again today and just was straight back into the way he was. When he first pulled in, he said, oh my God, I remember walking down here and doing this. Brilliant.
Oh, unbelievable. It's easy for me to forget, having been here 30 years, obviously I walk in these doors all the time, I see people, famous people, musicians turn up here all the time and have done for 30 years, so it's absolute norm for me. But what you still get is every band that comes here for the first time, or members of this group that have come here to do this event, is what they get. You still never lose that feeling because you get it from everyone else who comes here. You relive it time and time again, and seeing all these people turn up and going, like you said, seeing all these elements of the studio you've seen or read about before, and seeing the buzz on people's faces and like remembering, this is the first time they felt this. I feel this all the time. But it never really goes away, even after 30 years, because it's a constant turnover. Yeah. Every band who comes in, what was it like with Oasis? What was it like? Was that where so-and-so was done? And that excitement. So I relive it all the time.
Yeah.
So it never gets boring.
Yeah.
Well, where we're stuck right now, we've just moved from a room there because it was too noisy to this little room here. Look, what stood next to us? That was used on the Charlatans album. What other albums was that?
What is that?
It's a Hammond organ.
That's a Hammond organ.
So pretty much everything that's been done here since the early 90s, on that every
Hammond track done here would be on that one, including that the Charlatans.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you were saying yesterday that Kingsley's like got stuff in sheds. Yeah. Oh, there was a funny story when Kingsley was telling the stories today. He's like, someone's come back looking for a tape from 1970 odd. And he's going, oh, yeah, it's in the shed just next to the horse shit. And it was, wasn't it?
It was.
And it was.
It was. In the shed under the horse shit. Squeeze, was it Squeeze came back?
Squeeze, how was it? Squeeze.
Yeah. Squeeze. Yeah, it came in. Have you got our tape from 1974? Yeah. Where is it? In
next
the shed
the
under
shit.
The horse shit. And it was. It'll never work, that but they got it. Yeah, so.
Wow.
Because they got the tape store, as tapes are properly stored, but there's also tapes from way back when they didn't have anywhere to put it.
Right.
And when the record companies don't come back and get them, or the bands don't come back and get them, they have to put them in the
horse shit,
basically
shed.
In the shed.
Yeah.
And they've been there for years, and the sheds are damp full of horse shit and hay, you know. So, yeah, that's where a lot of them are.
There'll be a day when this place isn't here, and there'll be a day when it is a memory. And I think these sort of things now, recording this sort of stuff, is really, really pivotal.
Yeah.
Because, like, we had a chat yesterday about it. It's like, is it the last one of its kind?
In this country, this size and this history, you know, residential-wise, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and so many careers starting here. We talk about Oasis and Stone Roses a lot because that's kind of what we're doing here. But you forget Ozzy Osbourne was 16.
Yeah.
Lemmy, they were all here when they were starting out. It was all their journey. Dave Edmonds, you know.
Iggy Pop and David Bowie.
Yeah. Everybody, and then Queen, even, you know, when, like Kings were saying, when they first came and they had nothing, and the next time they've got big trucks and they've got roadies and they've got all this gear and stuff. And everywhere you look, there's little elements of those bands still around here, you know, and like the piano is still the same piano from Don't Look Back in Anger, there's still the piano from the Queen albums over there. So there's all these things wherever you go, and the people here, because it's been in the same family, it's not been a corporate where it's changed hands, it's the same family. So can tell you, you know, Kingsley's 84 years of age, so he's got all those memories, all those stories, and so have the kids, because the kids grew up here playing frisbee with Freddie Mercury, or, you know, riding horses with David Cassidy, you know, it's like kind of so bizarre. So it's, really special place.
Incredible. What a day. Amazing. Even, as I say, even only being here for a part of it, but yeah, getting to hear that. I had a bit of a play on one of Noel Gallagher's guitars, on Noel Gallagher Les Paul, which that was amazing. And the obviously I can't play, but it was, I had a fiddle on it. And
I don't play, but you got to hold it, you got to have a picture, you got to
look at it. And then actually doing it in Rockfield, you know, adds another little element to it, doesn't it?
Oh,
wait a minute.
Yeah, do you know that one?
Yeah, I know that one. That is great.
Watching your face when you're listening to them tracks at the end, I thought he's really getting it, really feeling it.
I mean, the mad thing, I don't know how much we'll say about it. So yeah, so we did hear these three tracks that, you know, that you own that are no longer available, and the only time anyone will get to hear them is by coming to the next Oasis Collectors Group event. But yeah, there's one where it's in a different song, you know, and it's sort of playing along. You think, this is an amazing melody. I've never heard this before. And then suddenly we go into... something he's reused later for a massive single, and you go, wow. And then it goes back to the, and you just think, it just those changes, and it reminds you, when you hear a Noel song that you've never heard before for the first time, it reminds you of the power of that man as a songwriter.
Yeah.
That, you know, a verse is ticking along, and you're thinking, that's a nice verse, and then, and there'll be a key change, or there'll be a little shift, and you just go, you know, and it takes your breath away. The hairs go on your neck. And that's why he's the best.
That's been the best moments for me at these events, is that ending. And people being tired, ready to go for a beer, ready to relax a bit, and then going, right, and we've got this last thing for you. And I like looking around the room at that stage, just seeing what's what, and just watching people's faces change.
Yeah.
Making sure no one's fucking recording it.
So anyway, here's a clip of
Here's what he was talking about.
And I heard you say, so you might be coming back again later this year, maybe?
Yeah, we've got a few ideas, haven't we, Nick? Well, I think it's very likely there'll be another one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a thread to these things. Obviously, there's I do all the Britpop stories. I've been here since 93 or two. I've worked with all those bands. So we do all of that. We do the tour, the studios. There's certain things that we're thread, but each time we do them, there's something different.
Yeah.
We throw in a surprise. We throw in a different part of the thing. We get a different speaker. There's so much you could do, so much scope to do, so many different things. But the backdrop is the same, and what better backdrop is there than this, you know? And
absolutely brilliant. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. An amazing, amazing couple of days, and yeah, I can't wait to do the next one.
Yeah, sit on the Hammond and have a go.
Yeah, give it a bit of a weirdo. All right, cheers, boys. Cheers,
unshakable.